On the November 2nd edition of WINA's Best Seat in the House, Jed Williams talked with William & Mary Athletic Director Terry Driscoll. Driscoll was on the show to talk about the NCAA's feelings about schools that have mascots and logos deemed to be politically incorrect. William & Mary is one of those institutions.
I guess this matter, which has been brewing for well over a year, almost a year and a half now, it hasn't necessarily reached a resolution, but it's finally reached some sort of conclusion. Is that the right way to put it here?
I would say, yeah, we've reached a conclusion in terms of the process with the NCAA. That process was completed when they turned down our final appeal. It was reviewed at the board of directors level. And so within the context that we have to operate, that was our last opportunity to retain our logo as is. The next step will be towards a modification or a new logo.
How quickly do you need to get that done so that you don't put yourself in a perilous position when it comes to hosting NCAA championships and things like that?
We've been notified by the NCAA that our decision to abide by their ruling has essentially given us the rest of this year in terms of the use of the logo, both in facilities and on uniforms. So we have, through the end of this academic year, which will take us through the spring, and then for next year, the anticipation is that we would not be able to use those logos going forward.
What's the process going to be like in terms of conferring between Board of Trustees, Athletic Department, Administration to figure out a new logo? How's that going to work?
Well, if you're familiar at all with William & Mary, we tend to be pretty inclusive down here, and, of course, we're not an enormous university either. So the Vice President of Student Affairs, Sam Sadler, has been appointed to head a committee that will include students, student-athletes, potentially alumni, some administrators, faculty, a fairly broad-based committee. And at some point, I would expect that we'd probably involve a design firm to assist us, on the technical and mechanical side. And the idea is that we'll accept ideas and thoughts on what might be a new logo going forward. Hopefully, in time for the fall of next year, we'll be able to have something in place.
Any ideas what that can be? Specifically, your mascot is still the tribe, and there's a very unique connection to the local Native American tribes. Can you do anything sort of slight tweaking with that logo where it still maintains some sense of that connection without being considered offensive or hostile by the NCAA?
Well, I think the NCAA makes that determination. We've had a number of suggestions. Probably the most frequent suggestion we've received is that if you're familiar with the logo, which is an M overlaid on a W, then the two feathers attached to sort of the lower right hand corner, is that the shape of the M there allows you to change it sort of rather simply into an inkwell, and to deposit those feathers in that inkwell, which retains the look of the logo. Obviously, it's not the same thing, but that's probably the thing we've heard the most about, but I think we probably are going to take the opportunity to open things up and see how creative people can be and see where we come up.
Terry Driscoll is the athletics director at the College of William & Mary as we talk about the NCAA's ruling tonight on the best seat in the House. Mr. Driscoll, let's go back in the timeline. I guess it was summer, maybe July or August of 2005, when the NCAA's initial watch list or sort of inquiry into mascots and logos around the country began. How did you all first learn of this inquiry and that you all were subject or part of this investigation by the NCAA?
Initially, there were, I believe, 30 institutions that were identified to potentially fall into this category of concern for the NCAA. And they asked us to prepare a self-study. And in essence, they provided us with a host of questions covering a number of different areas. And as an institution, as a member of the NCAA, these types of things are not infrequent, so we weren't totally unfamiliar with the process. But we completed the self-study and explaining and answering the questions that were in the self-study that covered a number of issues, primarily explaining our relationship to the Native American imagery that we had in the form of our logo, and the college's relationship to Native Americans over the years. So there's quite a bit of information there. It took several weeks to put together. We submitted that report, and we actually our time frame was a little different than everyone else because when the initial request for the report came from the NCAA, we were in the process of identifying a new president, and so we asked them for an extension. So we actually completed our report about 6 months after everyone else. So we were probably the last one in when it came to these types of reports.
Did you fear the worst at the time? Did you have serious concerns about what the NCAA might do? Or because of the uniqueness and the longstanding nature of that relationship with the Native American tribes, did you feel good about William & Mary's position at that point?
I think everyone involved here felt that from a reasonable perspective and understanding the institution, understanding a lot of the information we put in there, we felt that our explanation was very clear, and really we're not overly concerned about the result, but because we felt we made a very reasonable and understandable case, and quite frankly, we had the only thing that was at issue was our logo, and if again, it's difficult if you're not familiar with the logo. Mm-hmm. Other than a W&M and two feathers, and when I say feathers, these are sort of characterizations of feathers, and it'd be very difficult to identify what animal or where these feathers came from, let's put it that way.
I think a lot of people were confused when the NCAA upheld the mascot, the tribe, but barred the logo, the feathers around the W and the M. Did you have a hard time reconciling the fact that one was upheld and the other was not?
Well, the NCAA, in their explanation to us, accepted our use of the name tribe, which here has become more the symbol or our nickname. It relates more to the community values, and you know, we're a relatively small residential campus. 75-80% of our people live on campus, and we're a school of 5,400 undergrads. So there's a community sense here, and that tribe name sort of characterized or epitomized that community sense, which is what we explained, and we also explained that we had moved from the old nickname of Indians to tribe to reflect that. Mm-hmm. So there was some, you know, there was a logic there and a deliberate action taken by the institution several years ago to do that. The NCAA then said, well, that was fine. However, they felt that it's by having the feathers attached to the W&M logo that drew in the Native American relationship, and that they felt that those feathers still fell into the category as hostile and abusive potentially to Native Americans.
Okay. Terry Driscoll is with us, the athletics director at William & Mary. Obviously, I'm sure the NCAA's explanation probably didn't suffice for you guys, wasn't enough. You know, there have been other logos and mascots out there upheld, and yet yours was not, even though you have this distinct relationship, and even though the mascot was allowed. When the NCAA explained this to you, was it pretty unfulfilling to hear their response back to you?
Well, they explained it to us on a couple of different occasions, because we did appeal it twice. So obviously, we believe then and believe now that the position we were taking was the correct position. Otherwise, we wouldn't have pursued it. Mm-hmm. So in trying to reconcile their decision with our feelings, obviously that wasn't going to work because, as I said, we believe that we're doing the right thing here. So the difficult thing to accept is that because of the nature of our relationship, you know, we're a voluntary member of the NCAA as an institution.
Right.
And within the context of their role as the administrative branch of this organization, you know, they do set rules and regulations, and this is one of the rules and regulations or one of the interpretations that they've chosen to take. And essentially, if we want to be part of the organization, then we need to abide by their rulings. So
you said,
was the frustrating part.
You said you went through the appeals process a couple of times.
Yeah.
What was that process like? What did that entail?
Well, it we got an initial response that we had not made our case, and we tried to take the information we'd gotten back and respond in more detail, basically a rebuttal of the points that they made. And after that, we were told by the NCAA staff that we, you know, there was, in their opinion, nothing had changed. And the last recourse is that our appeal is then sent along with the NCAA staff's opinion to the board of directors of the NCAA, and that's made up of college presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the ultimate say on it, and they reviewed both documents, and they chose to side with the NCAA staff.
Terry Driscoll with us, the athletics director at William & Mary. Now, your relationship with the local tribes is about as deeply embedded and longstanding as any you'll find in this country. It goes back three centuries to the 1700s. When you see that, let's say, Florida State, Utah, Central Michigan, schools like that had the initial decision overturned and had mascots and logos reinstated, and yours was not, was that a confusing NCAA decision for William & Mary to understand?
Well, I think it was not confusing from the standpoint of how it was presented. I think we found it to be inconsistent. If you're aware of what was done in the case of the namesake tribes, as the NCAA defines them, these are institutions that actually have the name of a specific tribe associated with them, as you know, as a nickname or through mascots and logos, whatever. They determine that if a namesake tribe, an institution, allowed an institution to use their name, then the NSA felt that they were not in a position to tell either the tribe or the institution what to do with regard to the to the name or the imagery of the logo or whatever. In our case, we have a generic name, and no specific tribe, you know, has with a specific relationship to a local tribe, whatever. Although we have several here in the area, and obviously have some conversations with them. So, as we looked at it, we felt that giving the intent of the NCAA's goal with this program and how it was eventually applied, we just felt that it was very inconsistent. And because of the inconsistency, we were coming out in a position that we obviously didn't want to be in.
And because the name tribe is such a general term, as you talked about, that limited your ability to solicit the help of specific tribes to come to your aid?
Well, we didn't, as you we didn't fall into the category that the NCAA created. You have to understand that we're playing in their ballpark, and they make the rules and they set the context, and we did our very best to, within the definitions as they made them, to show them that what we believed was the right way to go was was in fact the correct thing to do, and apparently our arguments didn't meet their standards.
Terry Driscoll with us. Terry, eventually you guys had to drop the argument and move on, and I'm reading the letter in front of me right now, dated October 10th of 2006, from your school president, Gene Nickel, to the William & Mary community. And he outlines three tenets there, three primary reasons of why it was the right time, I guess, to discontinue the appeal or the fight and move along. Can you just elaborate on that letter and how it's been received in the William & Mary community?
Yeah, I think fundamentally it goes back to what we're about here at William & Mary. Here, athletics is integrated into the educational mission of the institution. And in the simplest form, William & Mary's goal is to have their students, whether they're student athletes, student musicians, student care, whatever they are, to have that opportunity to, in the course of getting a liberal arts education, have that pursuit of excellence maybe for an area where they have a certain passion or whatever. In our case, our student athletes, these are individuals who, for them, that athletic experience at a very high level is really important to them as a person and in their overall goal of who they hope to be someday. So from that standpoint, Gene Nickel was not, did not feel it was right to compromise the opportunities of our student athletes and our coaches who, you know, are essentially their faculty, to run the risk of taking away the opportunities that they might have through, you know, competition in the NCAA. That was, I think that was the primary thing.
Sure.
And there are some practical aspects of it, as I mentioned, in the case of taking legal action, essentially because of our relationship with the NCAA as a voluntary member. In these types of situations, generally the option is either you can play by the rules or you can leave. And again, that would, you know, inhibit our opportunity to offer that chance for our student athletes and coaches. So at the end of the day, although we were not happy with the decision, it's best for us to move on and stay with sort of the more fundamental aspects of what we do here.
Yeah.
And when President Nickel made his decision and made and announced it, there was a large email base of alumni who received the letter explaining things. And I think the return or the comments on his remarks were 8 or 9 to 1 in favor of the decision. I think primarily because it was so well articulated and that people went away with a clear understanding of what our issues were, and that in fact we have a higher sort of a higher interest in where we're going here, and if this is something we have to accept in order to continue to do that, it's something we would do.
Yeah, Terry Driscoll's with us on the best seat in the House as we discuss William & Mary and the appeals process with the NCAA. One of the other tenets of that letter, to summarize, I guess, was, you know, there's the possibility that if this fight drags on too long, William & Mary sort of gets branded or stigmatized as part of this process in a negative way. Was that a concern that if this went on too long, William & Mary starts getting defined by this and not other better things, perhaps?
Well, again, when you have an issue like this, it's very difficult to crystallize exactly what the key points are. And in the course of any over a long period of time, obviously things can be misinterpreted, misquoted, and misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, that's not something that we would want to have happen with the college to any degree. So that was a concern, but doing the right thing, I probably was more important.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, people can have different opinions on the feathers, and obviously they're entitled to that. But as we sat back and said, all right, at the very heart of what we're trying to do, what's the right thing to do? And so I think that was the action that was taken, trying to be consistent with the values of the institution.
And to confirm one last time, it sounds like overwhelmingly it's been very well received at William & Mary.
Yes, I think it's been kind of interesting. We've seen more feathers at our football games this fall than we'd ever seen in the past.
Sure.
And so I would say that there is an understanding and acceptance, but there's still sort of a respectful protest to the fact that we will not be able to retain the feathers. And I wouldn't be surprised to see this continue for a period of time because people were not really upset about losing the feathers as the injustice as they perceive it in the decision and in the decision-making process. They just didn't feel that everyone was treated fairly and equally, and they also felt that the case that we made was a legitimate one. So the feathers have become a symbol of maybe a discontentment with how the decision was made rather than the actual decision.